Toronto is my hometown. But after Toronto, Stockholm is a city I've spent the most time in and feel the most home in, too. In fact, back in 2004, I spent more time in Stockholm than Toronto, using it as my home base while we were on the road. I think it's the main reason why back home, I still get asked if I'm living in Sweden, something I never really did for long, but I think Canadians have an odd fascination with hearing about people in the arts living abroad. It was fun, but there wasn't any high art happening either. Just a guy with a guitar and an iPod constantly logging onto the internet. That was it. Anyways, during these years, I've made many friends in Stockholm. Many of these people are in bands or working for bands or uber music fans. Playing in a band will have that happen. And through it all, probably our oldest and dearest friend after all these years is Dragan, guitarist of the Backyard Babies and the Helicopters. Dragan currently plays guitar in Michael Monroe's band, and this fall will mark the long-awaited debut of his solo album, simply titled Dragan. We met Dragan on the third show of our first ever European tour when we played the Malmo City Festival with the Backyard Babies. I was aware of the band because of Dragan's other band, which he co-founded, the Helicopters, and I also heard of his infamous departure from the band and subsequent landing on 2 feet to continue on with his childhood buddies in the Backyard Babies. A promotional poster of their album Total 13 used to hang on the walls of Full Blast Records, a local punk rock record store in Toronto that I used to frequent when I was totally broke. But the store owner, Luann, endured me quite graciously, especially when I'd stare at that Total 13 poster wanting to know why the guy spread on the ground on the cover would leave the unprecedented hype the Helicopters were garnering stateside at the time. I got my answer when I saw them play that day at the Malmo Festival. Man, did they blow me away. Dragan was on fire, or as I'd later find out, simply himself doing his thing, which was 10 times larger than anybody else's thing. Nicky Borg on vocals, Johan Blomqvist on bass, and Peter Carlson on drums. And they were all pounding out a beat in unison I had trouble keeping up with. A few months later, we were on tour with them across Europe. That remains my most memorable and favorite tours we've ever done. They might be rock and roll bad boys, but they have my utmost respect. If you mess with the Backyard Babies, you mess with me. Dragan has just about the most charisma I've had the privilege to be around. The guy oozes it, whether it's on stage jumping around with his guitar or backstage regaling everyone present with hilarious stories of whatever. He commands the attention of all around him. He's a household name in Sweden, and in rock, he's synonymous with its greatest luminaries. JC and I were enjoying time off in Stockholm this past summer when I reached out to Dragan asking if he had time to do a podcast episode. He agreed and suggested we do it at the studio where he was recording his solo album. The day before the scheduled time, he asked us if we'd be into laying down some bass guitar and vocals. JC and I were flattered as hell. Not only were we going to get to hear the Dragan solo album, but we'd be on it, too. When you are privy to an unreleased record listen from beginning to end, especially if the band or singer are present in the room, it can be one of the most awkward moments in your life if the album sucks. Believe me, I've been there. But when the record kind of blows you away and leaves you so inspired to write new songs or jam and wish that record was yours, it can be a great time for all. Listening to the Dragan solo album with JC that day got us so pumped. It got us talking about our next record. Getting to actually be on the record after listening to it helped us get all that newfound excitement we were feeling after hearing it all out onto tape. Going solo is something that I quietly talked to Dragan about years ago, and friends and I have pondered the possibility for a long time. Dragan, the album, is a confirmation for all of us who always knew that if he went solo, he'd hit it out of the park. When our part of the recording was over, JC and I accompanied Dragan and his producer, Per Viksten, singer-guitarist of the Wannadies, for a late lunch to a local spot near the studio to bang out this episode. And as you will hear, it catches Dragan at the most exciting stage of any record cycle, the eve of the album's completion. With an autobiography due out on September 4th and the solo album ready for release on September 25th, Dragon had much to be excited about. Contemplative and pensive, this session will get any curious listener frothing at the mouth to hear the Dragon solo album. Okay, without further ado, here is Dragon, JC, and Pear on the official Danko Jones podcast, and it starts now.
Thank you.
We just heard the new Dragon solo album in the studio, and then we laid down some tracks. Don't know if that'll make the cut, though.
It will.
Yeah?
I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
What can I say? You did it. You did a solo album. We've had talks about that in the past when we've been on tour together.
Yeah.
And you always told me you didn't want to be married to the mic.
When I'm looking at it, oh fuck, I gotta go on tour and I actually gotta front, you know, and be married to the mic. But I just guess, you know, I gotta get used to it in a way, you know, and. Oh, this guy's gonna be on the podcast as well. Per just joined us, the producer, and my companion on this album, When I started to work on this solo album, my big issue was, you know, I was so scared of, you know, fronting the song with, you know, singing, lead vocals. Because, you know, years ago, when I was supposed to do my vocal parts or whatever for songs, it was only, oh, well, you know, I never got people to really... it was always an issue for me. And then when I started to sing with Per... It just came natural, you know, and...
But I've said this many times, you know, on those Backyard Baby albums, like One Sound and yeah. Star Wars, those are great, really, really great performances. You have a naturally abrasive voice, a la, you know, Rod Stewart-y. You don't sound like Rod Stewart, but you've got that kind of, you know what I mean? That kind of...
Raspiness
to it.
Wow.
And then when you... It's kind of like when it's those singers when they just want to sing pretty, it sounds like they're screaming anyways. So it's that mixture of prettiness and roughness about it.
What can I say? Thank you.
I think you can say ka-ching.
Okay, ka-ching. I say that.
I think people say ka-ching.
I think you can say freak.
No, but
I think he's my main thing with Dragon, if I'm allowed to speak.
Yeah,
please, let's go.
is your energy. And I don't think I've ever met anyone, both with the guitar playing, you can hear instantly that you're playing guitar, and you can hear straight away when you're singing that this is a nutcase, this is a guy about to explode. You've got such a punch in your voice and in your guitar playing, such a level of energy that it's like, whoa. And that's, you know, that's really hard, you know, to you can sing well and you can play well, but it's really hard to, you know, to explode in every note like you do.
I feel you know, genuine, you know, happy. I can't fucking make one thing better on this album. So I gave everything I got for it, you know?
Yeah, you could tell. The songs are very well written. The production's great. But I'm not a gearhead, so I don't hear, you know, what vintage guitar you're playing or
well, I mean, how I'm going to, you know, destroy all those myths. I mean, it's the same fucking head. It's the same fucking guitar. And I can actually... I didn't tell you today because I was like, is these strings gonna make the whole session? You know, I haven't changed strings on my guitar, and that's the very same guitar that I've done all overdubs with, you know.
That's
all solos.
That's great. I know a lot of guitar players who do that, who use the same pack till, you know,
I won't say any names, but I've been working with producers that, well, you know, this song is ready now you've done rhythms, now you go change strings. And that's, you know, that's probably the worst thing I know in my life is changing strings on the guitar. I don't know why, I hate it.
So I just have to go back through the discography and just kind of narrow down who you're talking about, right? you don't have 25 albums out. I know you're going for kind of a rounded, varied sound, but it's not too varied. Mm-hmm. So it's not like you were telling me how much you wanted to convey that you listened to all these kinds of bands and you wanted to kind of funnel it into this album, but you know, you listen to all of this kind of music. How do you do that on a limited amount of tracks? Mm-hmm. I don't think that you don't have to. I mean, I think the album as a complete entity is a rock and roll album. That's no doubt about it. And I think that's what comes through. That's what should come through.
My biggest wish would be that, you know, and I think that's, you know, if we never met before, I think that both you, JC, and Danko, you could, you know, you listen to all these, and then you could figure out that, yeah, Dragon's got Rock and Roll over with Kiss at home, you know. He's got John Lee Hooker albums. He's got one or two Slayer albums. He's got fucking a few Beastie Boys albums. You know, I just want people to...
Maybe one Kiss record?
Yeah.
It's just one.
No, but, you know, for me, it was a big thing doing a solo album, because otherwise I've been writing, and then, you know, it's like, well, you know, and if somebody's, you know, it's like, well, that song is not really... I know it's not really good, but, it's, you know, it's the bass player's fault. You know, Johan couldn't play on that. You can always blame someone else in the band, but so, now I don't have anyone to blame, you know, right? Like... And so it's been important for me that, you know, the people love the album, I hope, but that also to, you know, that they can have, you know, a sneak preview or a sneak peek into my record collection.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And also not what I'm listening to right now, you know, that you can hear what I've been growing up with, you know, as in Kiss and Alice Cooper and like...
Well, as a Kiss fan, there was a couple of moments where I was able to point out, I guess couldn't kind of... remember the exact song, but there's like a tiny little melody line here from this band, and there's like a little kind of intro here from mm-hmm. from this guy here. Mm-hmm. Not all Kiss, but it was. I like it when people can point out the songs and the bands that we've taken from and that mm-hmm. we were influenced. It makes me feel like, well, if you were able to pinpoint it, then we should be in the ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're mm-hmm. in the ballpark of the bands that we're trying to emulate.
Yeah.
So it was good.
But also, I mean, I'm so marinated in that kind of music. So when I write, it's not that I'm saying I want to do a song that's blah blah blah. This song with Kiss, you know, it's just or you know writing melodies and stuff. It's just it's in my blood, you know, because I've been listening to it so much that I can't escape those songs.
Yeah, you can't. Yeah.
You can't run away from
them. You're not doing it on purpose.
You know. And also, you know, now we're talking a lot of hard rock albums, but also, you know, like Nevermind the Bollocks for me, you know, it's one of my, still, you know, if I got to be on a, you know, taking one album to, you know, to...
Yeah, that's fucking iconic, man, the album.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if I only got to, well, you...
Really?
Spend an album with the rest of your life. Yeah, never.
That would be the record.
Maybe that might be my record.
It's epic.
Or Kiss Alive one, the first really? Kiss Alive.
Really? It's funny though. You were talking about one song where you said, I think I can hear Kiss.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
particular song.
That was.
I wrote it before I met Tim. He finished it with me. But that's the song you've written.
Least
slightly less.
Yeah.
And I don't own one Kiss album.
No, but you know,
I'm sure I've heard all the songs, I know them.
Yeah, but that's what I mean, you know. And then
I don't have an Iron Maiden album. I don't have a Black Sabbath. Yeah, I do. I do have it.
No, but I mean seriously, it's you know,
yeah.
You came down with the song and more or less the melody as well. But then I'm just saying that I'm so marinated in Kiss that you know.
It just comes
that
out.
Even if you have the line, it's how you pronounce stuff or or how I twang the guitar.
Even your energy changed the song.
Yeah.
Because when I was half finished,
yeah.
I thought I would be singing it, and then I thought a girl band in the UK were going to sing it.
Yeah.
And then when you sang it, it completely changed direction and became this more punky rock song.
Yeah.
But it's funny, I just realized, you know, when we grew up, it was hard rockers against the rest. And I was a punk rocker, but I was the rest. So I grew up amongst. So I'm kind of making friends with the enemy now.
Yeah.
Because even though we are fucking the same person, you're hard rock and I'm not.
So yeah, well, I mean,
I'm indie alternative punk. And you're hard rock. You have tattoos and you take your
shirt. Pear was, by the way, the main songwriter and the frontman in a band called The Wanna Dice from Sweden that had great success in Sweden and also abroad, like England. You had top 10, 20 hits there in the charts.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, and we were actually signed to the same label, BMG, with Backyard Babies and The Wanna Dice. So we haven't been hanging out before, but we met, you know, in various pubs and stuff, and
been
talking a bit. But now when I'm talking to people, I'm working with Pear. We're finishing the album. Like, what? He's like a pop guy, you know. He's and you're a hard rock heavy metal guy. It's like, I'm not a fucking heavy metal guy. He's not a pop guy. It's so the clash, you know, when we met was just fucking what I think. I mean, Pear, he saved my album. I would say, in a way.
And you saved my life.
Some people just don't understand Kiss, and I can't trust them. You know. No, but seriously, I wouldn't make any deal whatsoever. Even if it's hey, can you buy me a pint of lager? I'll pay you back later. I'm like, do you like Kiss? No, I can't. I wouldn't lend you a fiver. You know, if you're a Kiss fan, I can lend you a couple of grands. You know.
When you mention, when you say sweet, mm-hmm. and you say T-Rex and stuff, and you say that he brought it into you, to the album, and it wasn't present there before you came in. Mm-hmm. I think, especially a band like Sweet, is a natural bridge to a band like Kiss,
mm-hmm.
and to you.
Mm-hmm.
When I think of, you know, it's a bad, pop is a bad word in rock and hard rock circles,
mm-hmm.
but when I think of your solo album, if I was to A&R it, and if I was to say where it should go, I think I would say that Dragon should keep the edge, but have that pop sensibility, and that would push it over the edge. It's much like how we conduct our band.
Yeah.
You know, we're very much hard rockers, but we're also aware of melody and pop sensibility, and I think
mm-hmm.
when you mix that with a very hard edge, it's
nitro and glycerin.
Yeah.
No, but actually, you
that's
know...
That's why you can afford to do that.
He actually fucking just unleashed me and let me just fucking go crazy. And he likes my ideas.
Yeah, but you weren't fucking hard to unleash. I just looked at you and you fucking went for it.
but you know, a lot of times, like, in Backyard Babies or with the helicopters, like, my ideas sometimes on a backup vocal or a guitar overdub or something for a song... A lot of time my ideas getting, you know, rated, you know, because they think I got,
well,
like...
there's a lot more voices. This time it's just your voice for this thing.
Yeah, but, you know, it doesn't matter. It can be a guitar overdub. It's like, oh, that tone is a little sketchy, you know. And I'm like, fuck that, you know. Just, you know, there's no rules in music.
No.
You know. And Pear was, on the other hand, what
do you
say?
You have
encouraged, that's the word, right?
Yeah.
He encouraged me, like, yeah, man. Now it's kind of like, it's almost like writing a book, you know, about yourself, because it's my solo album. I can't talk about anyone else than myself. And it's so not so hard to explain, you know, because people don't realize that it's about my life.
What is the state of the Backyard Babies now?
It's on, you know, we're still having a holiday.
Permanent hiatus.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, we've been talking about getting together again soon, but I mean,
I find you are having so much fun doing this.
Oh yeah,
this is a new lease on life.
And to be honest with you, I've been thinking about this ever since I was on a train on my way from Berlin up to Stockholm again, and then I had to make a phone call to Nicky Anderson from the helicopters, and that was a luxury problem as well. But I had to choose between playing in the helicopters or Backyard Babies. We came to the point that it was, you know, both bands had too many gigs, so I couldn't play in both, and I had to choose. And that day, I started to realize that, fuck, I can't, one day I'm going to do a fucking solo album, you know. So it's been in the back of my head. And then, you know, I think I already talked when we toured the last time. And that's like, what is that? That's like...
That was in 09.
You've been 09. Talking about this for a while.
Yeah. 4 years. And then we did the last... I remember this because the last show we did with Backyard Babies was in April 2010 in Osaka in Japan. And then the rest of the guys had a flight, an early flight. So they more or less went off stage, no showers or anything, and went straight into a van to the airport to fly back home. And me and my wife were staying 1 week in Japan just for a holiday. And it was such a weird feeling because we knew all that we're going to take this break after that. So I was just sitting still, sweaty in my stage clothes in a like big, you know, dressing room by myself and just thinking, well, this is the first day of... You know, tomorrow that solo thing starts. You know.
That's awesome. I mean, it's awesome in the sense that it's very inspiring to see you at a point in your life, at a crossroads in your life, and you're excited about it. It's a new adventure, and the results, which we've heard, make it exciting.
Yeah.
And I think, are we the first people outside of the inner circle of the production team to hear it?
Yes, you are.
That's correct.
Well, this is a...
Yeah, you're the first two that actually, besides my wife and my manager and Per and Peter, the Backyard Babies drummer, you are the very first of all people.
Well...
Not even Nick Anderson that plays drums on the tracks. He heard one track, you know, I just wanted to show him how good it, but the rest of the two, you know, the songs he hasn't heard.
Just shove it in his face.
not at all, but you know, so it's a big thing. And then, you know, I could have started the day after Osaka and start recording this, but, you know, then I know it wouldn't turn out to be this. Well, I think it would be impossible for me to make such a good album as I think that this is, because I needed to almost like plan and fucking just take a break from music and start, you know, what kind of an album. And it took me almost a year before I start writing, because I, you know, I could have done like a half-ass record, but why do that? You know, that's why it's been taking some time, because I wanted to just be ready, you know.
Får vi beställa käk?
Vill du ha käk också?
Ja, visst. Tre köttbullar.
Aha, ni kör den. Nej, men de kan inte vara sämre.
Nej. Fyra köttbullar.
Fyra köttbullar.
Och en pint.
Ja.
You guys want another one?
Yeah.
Another one. Nej, jag kör bil, så jag tar en Ramlösa.
En Ramlösa, en Cola Light. Och två pint stark.
Tack.
There you got a Swedish order of meatballs with the lingonberry.
This is a long time coming. We've known you for, a dozen
first
or so
years.
First
tour we've come in Europe. Yeah. I mean, the first time you saw us was...
Or second
Malmo
show.
Festival.
Oh, I know. There's a chapter in. Well, I'm a living promoting guy here, but my autobiography is coming out the same week as well on the biggest publisher in Sweden, actually, called Norstedts, and hopefully it's going to be out in English as well.
Yeah, that.
But there's actually quite a big piece about Danko.
Really?
Yeah, it's about like. I'm in one of those, what do you call it? We call them bayamaya, those horrible toilets you have in backstage or at festivals, you know.
Porta potty, whatever.
Oh, yeah.
The stink holes. But, yeah. But then, you know, I couldn't really hear. It was like a rumbling bass kind of thing. Well, you know what it is at festivals.
Yeah.
You know. And then I went back into the fucking trailer or whatever it was to get ready to get on stage. And then I was listening a bit more. What the fuck is this, you know? Had to run up on stage. I was almost delayed to my own gig because of you guys. And I was just fucking blown away. And then I was listening to two songs, went down, called Michael. God bless him, he just passed away.
Yes.
And call him and just kick the fucking support band off, because we got a new support band. We got to have these guys. Who are they? Like, you know.
That was, I mean, that was a great day. I remember that day, too. A lot of days, a lot of stuff happened for me in those 24 hours.
Yeah.
During our set, Tobe Lawrence, his assistant, held his cell phone up for him to hear, and we hooked up with Tobe. So we hooked up.
Your head was on the right place that day at the end. Anyway.
I know, right?
And suddenly, suddenly a few weeks later, we were on the same fucking tour bus in
that,
Europe.
That tour remains the craziest tour we've ever been on, the most memorable tour as well.
Yeah, it was the same for me.
And the one tour where we toured with the band where I think we got along so well that it's gone on and on and on in different ways, and we were always, you know, in touch with each other and it was a special tour.
It feels like yesterday, but it's been.
I know. It does.
It was a special tour, though. It was really special. For me as well.
Yeah. And it was weird when I look back at it today because it was like, I mean, I knew that you guys sounded great, but I mean, you guys could have been fucking four crazy lunatics, you know. Well, I mean, we could have been as well.
Well, could have. I have stories that I can't tell on this podcast because it's nuts.
Yeah, I know.
But I will leave out.
Well, there's stories that the Dirt with Motley Crue would be a fucking comic magazine.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, if you.
Yeah, there's some crazy, crazy fucking...
But that was not
just... Crazy moments on that bus, man. Yeah. But in the greatest way. I mean, I think everybody got along and...
But it wasn't just fun. Like a shorter 3-week tour. I think it was like a 5-week
tour. It was a really intense 5 weeks, tour.
So and 5-6-week
like
tour.
Two days off or something. Yeah, it was like bang, 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 bang.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
I never really thought about it until now we don't do those kinds of tours. And I saw the schedule. I looked back at the tour book recently and I'm like...
Yeah.
We did that and nobody complained because I would be complaining by now.
Yeah.
And it was a great tour. It was so much fun. We had so much fun on that tour.
But also, you know, because I got a feeling that maybe if we didn't have you guys, that we might have stopped becoming sloppy, you know, because we had, I mean, I still consider, you know, Danko Jones as our best, you know, we never had a support band even close to that quality. So we had to, you know, be on our fucking toes every night.
I just remember almost every night, you guys would be in the dressing room after your show, and you wouldn't be fighting or anything. You'd just be like talking very loud to each other in Swedish.
Yeah.
Very, very animated. The adrenaline is still going through everyone. And
yeah, well, we've been doing that for over 20 years. We've been.
I remember the first night I went to the dressing room. Hey, man, good show, and you guys were just rah, 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 back and forth. I'm like. Yeah. Okay, I'm just gonna wait. I think something, man. I hope the tour finishes. But that's just that happened every night. It's just almost that's how you guys do it. I mean,
yeah, I know.
Very
it's like, well, Peter and me,
passionate, very intense.
Yeah, we've been playing since '87 together, more or less, and I think that we've been having a fight after every show since that. Not a fight, but
no,
you know,
it's not
he
a fight.
Just tells me how fucking bad I played on that opening riff, and I'm just like telling him that he can fucking. Hold the beat in, you know, and then after
lovable
know,
stuff.
Yeah,
lovable
well, you know.
Well, yeah. I realize it's just part of the whole show. When you know, 20 minutes later, you guys were like hanging out, and everything's cool every
but
night.
But I think that, you know, but that's the thing with you know, it's never ever during our almost 25 years as a band, the same lineup. You know, same four guys. We've never had like an issue. Well, of course we're fighting, but it's never been any like violence involved ever. Not one single time. You know, and I think at the end, you know, it's kind of like therapy for us. Like we you know, when we come up after, you know, off the stage, you know, my anger on Peter's fucking he didn't whatever clean the bus at that place. You know, everything comes out after the gig, and then it's you know. We let it out that way, you know? And after that, you know, I guess. This is just my, you know, I'm just guessing here. But
Yeah. No, I've learned since then, whenever I see you guys play live, I give you at least half an hour, 40 minutes before
I knock
on
the door.
That's
a good advice.
Yeah. And that was that first show from that first... No, it wasn't the first show. It was the second show in Switzerland.
Yeah.
And you guys were fucking just screaming at each other.
Yeah.
But that's how it is.
I would say that one of our greatest tours ever was the last, you know, but it was less hanging out and stuff. But, you know, I understand Nick as well, but, you know, he stopped drinking, which was very good for him. and you know, stuff like that. But it was hard, you know. He had his own dressing room, and you know, trying to. But I understand it as well. But it was.
He just wanted to stay away from the temptations.
Yeah, but also, I mean, we were a tired band at the end, you know. So we felt that, you know, if we would have gone straight back from tour, started writing again, it would have been like an okay album. But you know, Backyard Babies will do another album, but I don't know when, you know. And I want to feel that, you know, fucking, you know, because you know, you can have the same band and you can like fucking have, take Appetite for Destruction or something. If the band, you know, doing those takes, same song, same players, everything, but they weren't really
into it
that day. You know, because that's our Achilles. Do you say Achilles?
Achilles heel. Yeah.
In rock and roll music, when we're talking about, like, you know, high energy rock, that, you know, it's not just about like the songwriting and about it, so you got to like deliver on a total different level than on, you know, if you're into, like, I don't know, folk or pop. I'm not saying that
twee.
Twee, exactly. No, but it's not. You gotta deliver.
Your favorite word, yeah. Twee.
No, but you gotta deliver. But also, you gotta, you know, you gotta have the fucking. It's gotta be like sparks around it, you know. And I, you know, you can't really. You just gotta have that magic moment. And if that moment with great songs is put together, then you're doing a classical album, I think.
You know, so, you were talking about before when. You had ideas and you tried them on people and they didn't like it, they didn't, you know, go for it, didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that if there's a bad thing about hard rock,
mm-hmm.
it's the conservatism and it.
Oh, I agree.
Elitism.
Yeah.
He's so good at playing guitar.
Yeah, but I've never been into that.
And you know, from that point of view, from a fucking. From a session musician's point of view, you're a shit guitarist and a shit singer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You've got fantastic ideas and a fantastic energy. You're fucking me. You're not a hard conservative. Yeah. No, I don't want to do. You're up for everything, and you come with the nuttiest ideas ever.
Yeah.
You're not scared. You're not classic. You're not. No, I don't want to do this. No, this is.
Well, I mean, if you're scared, you shouldn't be in there.
You just fucking go for it.
Yeah.
And that's very un-Led Zeppelin.
But also,
even though some of the songs we've done are a bit flat.
No, but I mean, I respect.
But,
yeah.
But, you know, it's not the kind of, yes, I am so great.
But, yeah, but finally that pays back to me now that, you know, my other friends that were playing guitar and stuff, you know, they were sitting, you know, picking out every fucking Eddie Van Halen solo and, you know, guitarists that I love as well, you know, Jimmy Page and stuff like that. I couldn't find. I mean, I started to write songs instead because I, you know, it's never been. Why should I try to sound like somebody else, you know, when there's already a Jimmy Page, you know? And finally, that pays back now. So I was so sloppy and bad that it became my own. My guitar playing became my own style, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
You do have a style. I can
yeah.
kind of pick it out when I hear
yeah.
your solos and.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
It's very in your face. And you want to do everything at one at the same time.
Yeah.
Fucking ADD
yeah.
monster. Ah!
So the album comes out with the book, or the book comes out with the album?
No, it's actually two. It's two separate. Oh, we get Swedish meatballs here.
Wow. Wow.
No, the book is. I mean, it comes out.
Wow.
Thank you.
It wasn't really planned because, you know, the record company is the record company, of course, but then it's the book publisher is another company. But it just happened that it, you know, I think it's a win-win kind of thing, because it's the people that loves my music, it's gonna, they want to read about my life, you know, because really the book is not, it might be like 25-30% music in it, but then it basically it's about my life, you know. from when I was born up to today.
So it's an autobiography? You had a ghostwriter?
Yeah.
Wow.
So I was spending, you know, and I've never been to therapy or anything in my whole life.
I was going
to
say.
And it was so weird, you know, because...
It's like talking to a therapist.
Yeah, because I met him like 2 or 3 times a week for a year. Times like 2 or 3 hours. So it's like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours cooked down to one book that is 300.
There's that much in your life? 2-3 times a week?
Yeah.
2 hours?
Well, I mean, then, you know, we had some pints of beers as well. And
then you talked about the game.
No, but then he's been really serious about it. So we've been...
Of course. So then he picks up threads and you keep on the discussion.
Yeah, and he was living... He's from Stockholm and he was living in the same area and went to the same kind of clubs and stuff. I mean, I didn't know him personally, but you know, when, like, Backyard Babies and, you know, the helicopters, that whole Stockholm scene took place, he knew all the small, you know, the small bars and where it actually started. So he was the great writer because he could also write about, you know, the feeling of those places. He can tell stuff, you know, that, you know, describing the feeling of that time, you know. And we've been home to my hometown, and, you know, we've been traveling a lot as well.
Did you have, did he use any other people, like, interview other people for it? Or
no,
it's
just me in the book, and my mom and my wife, actually. And I think a few words from my manager, Per, as well. Other than that, it's just me. So you know, it's not a book about, like, gossips. I mean, I could probably sell a few books about... You know, telling what other people did that would be, you know, interesting for people. But it's not a book.
And then Danko
like
went to sleep at 10 o'clock.
Yeah. No,
what a freak. Yeah.
What a crazy guy.
Yeah.
What a freak.
No, but it's been really hard to do as well because, you know, when Sixten, my son, was born, because then, you know, like another chapter boing coming in, and then, you know, I was putting him to sleep, you know. Feeding him, and then, you know, I was fucking reading about fucking crazy stuff I've been doing, you know, you know. So I just felt like, I don't know, it was like a mindfuck of out of proportion that, you know, it just fucked with my head, you know, because I was trying to, I don't know, being this responsible dad now, and then you know, I gotta like read a chapter about myself that, you know, that is not so responsible, you know.
Right.
So it was kind of. And I had to look at myself in a, like, the third person in a way, because I was like,
you have to detach yourself.
Yeah, to the writer and to the publisher. It's like, no, you get this. You can't write this. This story cannot be in the book, you know. Because I've been trusting this guy. So I've been telling him everything, you know, honestly. And then he's just writing, and then I just gotta, you know, take
it apart. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
take
incriminating
it apart,
stories, sure.
Yeah, you know, like, and then they're like, no, you can't take this away. It's a great story. I'm like, no, you can't. But then it's been like, you gotta think in a third person. Like, if I would read this story about, like, Keith Richards or Ace Frehley, I would love that story.
Yeah, that's
how you have to.
The only hard part for me is it's about me.
It's you.
So that's the mind, you know. And I guess that for somebody that enjoys, you know, reading a good story about, you know, people's lives that are, you know, not like others and are not interested in music at all or not even knowing who I am or what bands I've been in, I think that they're going to love the book anyway, you know. Because you don't have to be like...
You don't have to know...
No. It's not so much gear stuff, you know.
Yeah.
It's very little what kind of dimensions on the strings I have. You want, you know.
So you're going to go on a tour to support the album, but you're also going to go on a book tour as well?
Yeah, kind of book signing thing.
If I'm not mistaken, you have it. It's going to be in Swedish, English, and Japanese?
Japanese, yeah. And actually, I think Finnish as well.
Okay, good.
So, yeah.
That's great.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. But I mean, when I'm coming out on the other side at the end, you know, end of the tunnel, it's kind of like, you know, I seriously know more about myself than I did before.
Mm-hmm. It's therapeutic in a way, right?
Yeah, you know, like when we guys tour together, you know, some of those years, like between 99 or 2000 up to 2005, I know what I've done, you know, mostly, but I couldn't save. It was like 2000 or 2004.
So you can't remember the 90s either?
Well, nobody, it's kind of
remember
like,
the 2000s?
Yeah, nobody, it's kind of like a blur, but now yeah. It's more, you know, falling into, it's like, you know, playing Tetris in a way.
Yeah, so all the place, you know, and stuff.
Yeah. And also, you know, some of the embarrassing mistakes,
yeah.
They are all there. I think that, you know, I shouldn't say any bands, but some of them, they wouldn't have that in their book because it's all got to be so rock and roll all the time, you know. You know.
Mm.
And then the fucking, you know, drugs or booze or whatever, instead of, you know, one crate of beer, it's going to be 10. So, yeah. All, you know, it's...
excess.
Exaggerated, yeah.
And then, you know... And it's kind of like a story about a guy. I mean, we don't actually, we've never had a hit anywhere, you know. But we've been living out of music all our lives, you know. We've never done anything else. And it's not that many bands. I mean, some bands are, they can't fucking fill the local pub next to here, you know, in their own. And then they go down to Germany, they sell like 6,000 tickets.
Yeah.
We've never sold 6,000 tickets, but we can sell, you know, fucking 700 tickets. Even if we're in Stockholm, Rio de Janeiro, New York, or fucking Tokyo, you know? So.
Yeah.
That's no. The one thing that, yeah, we've had this similarity with that.
Yeah.
Same thing. We know that.
Exactly.
What
yeah.
That entails.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Well, it's time we enjoy the rest of the Swedish meatballs.
I'll take this. Yeah, I'll take this out.
Good, right?
Yeah, it's great. Thanks,
this is
man.
Great. Great being on the record today, listening to the record. Great meeting Per.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a nice Swedish, traditional Swedish
yeah, meatballs with mashed
meal.
You look like you really like
I
the
enjoy,
Swedish
I really do. I love the Swedish meatballs.
Yeah. This is the classic place. This is where all the poets and songwriters have been going for 100 years.
What's it called again, the place?
Ten stupid
means the...
Well, it's not lens. What's the other one that's a bit bendy, where you make...
I have no idea, but... All I'm saying, good album.
Good album. It's good seeing you, man.
Good seeing you guys.
Score.
Mm. Cheers.
Cheers. There you go.
All right.
That's the right way to end a podcast.
Mm-hmm.